This is Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I'm a big racehorse. I can run so fast I don't even think about being last. When I make my move, I don't feel no pain. I got running blood, so cut loose my reins. Don't hold on, don't hold back. If you're gonna run on the winning track, trying hard is not enough. You've got to have the running blood. Through my mane, I can't be held back, boys, I can't be tame. I'm a wild horse running across the plains. I got running blood, so cut loose my rein. And don't hold on, don't hold back. If you're gonna run on the winning track, trying hard is not enough. You got to have a running blood. You're gonna really see me shine. God gave me strong legs for a reason, to be the first to cross the line. Crack, feel the muscles rippling across your back. When you make your move, give it all your strength. When that running blood beats up by a length, don't hold on, don't hold back. If you're gonna run on the winning track, trying hard is not enough. You've got to have the running blood. So don't hold on, don't hold back. If you're gonna run on a winning track, trying hard is not enough. You've got to have the running blood. You've got to have the running blood. Ah!
To Equestrian Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a show that I think you're certainly going to enjoy today. We have an outstanding young cowgirl named Amberly Snyder, who will be joining us on the show. She has a story that I think will inspire and uplift all of us. We also are happy to have joining us a little later in the program, multi-award-winning singer-songwriter Junie Fisher, and horseman, author, and movie mogul, soon to be, Mark Rashid. So we look forward to having a great show with us, with you today, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Amberly Snyder.
Dreaming big and working hard and having faith, making sure you make the most of every breath you take. And knowing that today ain't just another day going by. And it's living every moment in the here and now. saying never, cause that just ain't how you ride. That's life on planet Cal, girl. I'm grateful every day that I get to call. Bring on that horizon, shooting for the moon and stars. Heading down the trail, let's travel even more.
Even though
it must be a long and winding rocky road, you ain't scared at all, cause deep inside you know your heart. That's life on planet. I'm grateful every day that I get to call.
Cowgirl, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. We're really happy to have with us as our first guest today, Miss Amberly Snyder. And Amberly, how are you doing?
Just great, even though it's a little freezing here in Utah. Still good.
Well, good. Well, you know, I think you brought the sunshine to Tennessee, because yesterday was just really overcast and cloudy. And probably just before I called you, the sun popped out. So I think it has something to do with you. So we're glad to have you on the show today. And you have a terrific story that we want to share with our audience. But let's talk a little bit about your early activities with horses. When did you get started and involved with horses?
So actually, My dad, he was not into horses, and my mom, she had a horse when she was little. My dad did the Major League Baseball route, and so with me wanting to do horses, it was kind of a new thing. And when I was really little, my mom would actually draw the barrel pattern on my hand all the time. So it was just stuck in my head that was what I wanted to do.
Oh, gosh. How old were you then, Amberly?
Oh, my heavens. I was probably 3, 4.
So they
not
really
even
started,
I guess
young.
Not even that. Yeah, it was really small because I started my first riding lessons when I was 3 years old.
Wow, that's
so
fantastic.
I mean, just fell in love with it from the beginning. And the barrel, the place where I rode actually wasn't really a barrel racing facility, so I would set barrels up. I would just set up little cones, and I would take my pony around them every day that I'd go ride. And fell in love with it. I mean, from the first time I got on a horse, it was like coming home. Like, that was the place where I was the most happy. And I don't think that ever changed. I think it stayed like that always. And
yeah.
When I was 7 is when my dad said we were moving to Utah from California. And I said, I'm only moving if you buy me a Palomino barrel horse. So that's what he did. When we got here to Utah, we searched and searched, and we found a Palomino barrel horse. So I had my first horse, Lacey.
Well, that's great. You know, it's amazing.
Started competing.
It's amazing how little girls can get their daddy to do what they want.
Yeah, and my dad loves to please his little daughters. There's four daughters in my family, and, yeah, we all were daddy's little girl from one point to another, so he definitely knows how to make us happy.
Well, that's great. Now, when you moved out to Utah, when was that?
That was when I was 7.
Okay.
Is when I moved to Utah, and so I went in 98 is when we moved here, and that's when I got to start competing, actually competing in rodeo, and fell in love with it. And, I mean, just everything about it, the atmosphere, the even just practicing, just anything with horses, and then you add speed and competition, and I'm in love. So that's how it was, and it's always stuck with me from that day on. I mean, that's what I did every day after school, went and rode.
Right. So you started competing at 7. And and what type of events did you compete in, and how'd you do?
So I started with the horse that I got. She knew barrels and poles. So I did barrel racing and pole bending, and then I learned how to goat tie and eventually learned how to breakaway rope. And I would say I did all right. I mean, it's funny now when people, I meet somebody, you know, here in Utah, and they'll say, oh, my heck, Amberly, you were one of those girls that when we saw your trailer pull up to the rodeo, we just thought we should pack up and go home. And I would laugh, and I'm like, oh, my heck, you know, I never thought that, I don't know, I guess I never thought that way. But to hear that, it's cool to know that, I don't know, people knew that I was there to compete, you know. They knew that I had the talent with me and my horse and that we put in the hard work in order to be successful when we got there.
Right.
So I feel like I did pretty good.
Well, you were certainly considered a threat by those that were competing with you. You know, it doesn't just happen that you're successful when you compete. So how much time did you spend practicing?
Every day. I mean,
every
when you want to be good at something, anything, when you want to be, it doesn't have to just be horses, but, I mean, every day. I was going out and riding every day, and from the first time I started riding, and when I got here to Utah, I was in second grade, and, you know, that's when a lot of kids are playing every day, or, you know, that's what they're worrying about is who they're going to play with, and for me, it was, what time am I going to go ride, and what am I, and especially when I added more horses to that, when I had more to ride, it was, when am I going to ride, and what am I going to do with them today, you know, am I going to work the barrels today, or am I going to just work on something else, work on the poles, work on going on trail? I mean, it was something different and a lot of time. And that only increased throughout junior rodeo and then up into high school rodeo. That only became more of a time consumer because, I mean, you want to be good. And if you want to be good at this sport, you have to put in the time for it. So definitely a lot.
Did you have did some of your siblings participate in rodeo? You got some other horse people in your family?
In my family, there's 6 kids, and my oldest sister did gymnastics, and then I did the rodeo. My brothers played baseball, and My little sister, she likes dance. And then my littlest sister, she's 10 years younger than me. I got her addicted to horses, too.
Well, great.
So, yes, it was wonderful. Like, I mean, to be able to compete in something you like doing is awesome. And then to be able to share that with somebody that you love is even better.
It really is.
She started really coming in about 6 years old is when she really decided she wanted to step up and do it. So I was 16, and I handed her whatever horse I had at the time, and, yeah, we started competing together.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So is she still actively involved?
She is. She is. What was actually one of the coolest things that ever happened was in 2009, we both did a series. It was the last year I could do it, and we both ended up winning saddles, winning the all-around together. And so that experience of being able to accomplish it with your little sister was, oh, one of the best experiences of my whole life.
Well, that is exciting, and it's great to have that same kind of relationship with your sister. 2009 was a pretty good year for you, wasn't it, as far as competing?
Yeah, 2009, I would say, was one of the best years of my whole life. I mean, in high school rodeo, it's really tough here in Utah, really, really tough. We have amazing athletes, and that year I just thought, you know what, this is my last year, and every time I enter that arena, I'm going to enter it like it was my last run that I'll ever make, and I'm going to make every run count. And and even not in high school rodeo, but just in any rodeo that year, because it was, you know, my 18-year-old year, and that's when a lot of stuff changes.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that's kind of, you know, your last year of that age of rodeo. So I did that and was able to make high school finals. I won the average during the three runs at state finals and went to high school finals in the pole bending, which was so great because the horse that I was on, vets had told me she would never run again. She was getting recurring injuries, and they said, this horse is not going to be able to do it anymore. There's no chance. And I thought, no way. You know, my horse is going to do it. I'm going to give her the time off, and we're going to recoup and come back. So to be able to come back and make high school finals that year was awesome on her.
Wow.
And then I was, yeah, it was amazing, you know, to be able to do it, but not only to be able to do it, but to do it on a horse that they said wasn't going to be able to run anymore.
That's right.
And then Little Britches Finals is where it really was awesome. I made it back there and ended up leaving with the finals and the world all-around titles. So to be able to walk away from that rodeo with two saddles, 11 buckles, and, you know, two world titles, that was pretty cool. And
Amberly, you were doing
it.
Okay. Yeah, you were doing okay.
I was doing okay. Yeah. And then and at the end of the year, I won that finals with my little sister. And, oh, yeah, cap off 2009 was one of the best years of my whole life.
Yeah, now the finals occurred in what month?
That was in July.
Okay.
You spend a week at national finals for the high school, and then you drive from Colorado. Well, I drove from New Mexico to Colorado to compete for another week. Two straight weeks of rodeo. It really doesn't get better than that.
Oh, no, that was pretty neat. And but then something happened in January of 2010.
Yes. So I had been offered a job. I was serving as state SSA president at the time, and so I wasn't going to school. And I'd been offered a job in Denver, Colorado at the stock show, and it was really a dream come true job. But I had to go to Logan for a couple days first and for some SFA meetings. So I left Logan at about 4:30 in the morning to start my drive to Denver, Colorado. And, I mean, just a normal drive down there. Didn't think a whole lot of it. I was pretty excited to take a trip by myself that far. And I had stopped in Rawlins, Wyoming at a gas station, and when I got back in my truck, I didn't put my seatbelt back on. I had been wearing my seatbelt all morning. I mean, from 4:30 to this is like 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'd had it on the whole time. But I didn't put it back on. Less than 10 minutes later, my whole life completely changed. As I was going through Sinclair, Wyoming, I looked down to check my map, and when I looked up, I skidded over a lane and headed towards one of those mile markers on the side of the road. So for me at that point, I mean, I grabbed my wheel and tried to correct my truck. Well, that sent my truck sliding across the road. At that point, it was just, I mean, for me thinking it was just don't roll. As long as I don't roll, I'm going to be okay. And I grabbed my wheel with both hands and tried to bring it back straight. And just as I thought I was going to be, that I was going to be okay and I had it under control, my back right tire caught the dirt on the side of the freeway and it pulled me completely sideways.
Wow.
So, I mean, 18 years old, my truck is lifting up off the ground is where it starts rolling, and all I can think is, this is it. I mean, I'm going to die right here, and I can't do anything about it. And that's kind of a scary feeling right then, you know? You're not in control at all of what's about to happen.
Right, right.
So I was ejected from my truck and hit a fence post on the side of the road and broke my back and injured my spinal cord. And I didn't get knocked out during that whole thing, so I remember everything. And sitting on the side of the road, looking at my truck and seeing what it looked like and seeing everything around me, it was literally like seeing the pieces of my life sitting around me, and I couldn't even move to pick them up. And that was hard. It was a hard moment to, I mean, especially when I moved my fingers and I went down to move my toes and nothing happened. And I realized that something was really wrong.
Well, Amberly, it's kind of hard to listen to you talk about that experience. And I shared with you the other day that I lost a son in an automobile accident where he was thrown out of it. So I guess that makes it a little bit tough. But that's not the end of the story. Because we're talking with you today, and when we come back, we're going to take just a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to let you kind of bring us up to date with what's going on and how you overcame that, and we're going to open the phone lines up for folks if they'd like to call in and say hi and maybe ask you a question. So the number to call in will be 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396, and give me a chance to compose myself after you talked about that. And we're going to listen to a song by Junie Fisher that you'll enjoy called Fly. And when we come back, we'll be talking more with Amberly Snyder. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Sometimes they were what got me through, but hardship and heartache got to me, made me doubt all that I knew. Then I spent my life dragging a shadow, wasted youth chasing a light. Finally came back to what I needed most, and everything's clear when I ride. So we dance to the heartbeat of hoofbeats in a harmony without a sound, with the reins in my hands there is freedom to fly. You allow me to sit on your back. When I let go and let you be a horse, you give me the courage I lack. It's a partnership old as the ages, ever changing who teaches who. There have been some help me, but the teacher I've learned from is you. We dance to the heartbeat of hoofbeats in a harmony without a sound, with the reins in my hands there is freedom to fly without leaving the ground. Without speaking, you comfort my soul and quiet the storm in my mind. Who needs the rest of the world when I'm riding, I let it go by. While we dance to the heartbeat of hoofbeats,
listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Amberly Snyder. And Amberly, you have just taken the horse by the reins, I guess. And
yeah,
and
I think I've had to.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, you had the wreck, you had the broken back, and you know, I guess maybe for a little bit you thought just things had changed forever.
Yeah, not at first, actually. At first, it didn't even cross my mind that riding a horse wouldn't even be possible, or not that it wouldn't be possible, how hard it would be. I mean, I told the doctors in the beginning that that's what I did. I rode horses, and they said, you know, you're going to have to find something else. You're going to have to find something else that you do, another hobby. And I said, it's not what I do, it's who I am. So if you try to tell me that I can't be who I was, then that doesn't work for me. And being told that I wouldn't ride again was harder to hear than being told I wouldn't walk again.
Yeah.
Because it's all I've ever done, and it's been my biggest love. It really, it's who I am. So that was hard. But I didn't think about it not even be possible. Like, I just said, you know what, I'm doing it. I told my mom, I don't care if you have to strap me into my horse, tell me I'll ride, and she said she would. And it was the first time that I got on my horse that I thought, this isn't the same. And I used to not want to share this story because I didn't even want to have people know how hard it was, but I think I've come to grips with it that it's okay. And the first day that I got on, at first, I mean, it was a couple months after. It was about 4 months after my wreck. And I finally convinced my doctors and my mom and my dad that that's what I was doing. I was going to get on.
Yeah.
So the day that we planned it out, some family, some friends decided to come over and, you know, watch this big moment. And we saddled at my rope horse, and I get lifted on him. And really, it was like the second I sat in that saddle, I was like, this isn't the same.
Mm.
And it was crushing that I couldn't feel my legs around my horse.
Yeah, that contact
and,
was gone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was like that connection that I'd always been used to and felt, it wasn't there, and it was hard. So I actually had to... I had a recoup from that, and I tried a few different things, and it ended up being okay, but I didn't end up getting, I got on the next spring, and I'd gone to school and left my horses home, and I let myself adjust to how life was, And I mean, mentally, physically, emotionally, just let myself adjust. And when I got back on the next spring, I was ready for it. And I was able to go out and pick up a lope on my horse, and it felt amazing. It felt like how it should every time you get on.
What was different, Amberly?
I think that I was different. I don't think that anything else was different. It was just me.
Mm-hmm.
That fall, before I'd left them and gone to school, I'd actually gotten all the hookups that I needed. I had my seatbelt put on. I had the Velcro straps that went around my legs. I had that stuff. It was so different that it bothered me. It hurt me on the inside that I couldn't get on my horse or on any horse and be the person I was before. So I was different. I mean, I came back with a whole different mentality of, okay, you know what? Like, if this is going to make me happy, then it's going to make me happy. You know, there isn't going to be anything else that's going to change that. And
right.
I think what also helped is when I went to school that fall, I tried to find something else. I did. I put in a good effort of trying to play the guitar, trying to cook, trying to just hang out with friends. I mean, anything that could maybe fill that void, and nothing touched it. Nothing was even close. So when I did get back on, it was that connection was there, and it was just like, okay, and really, this is where you know you want to be. So from then, I never have let anything else stray me from my
horses
ever again.
Well, and you've gone on, and you're competing successfully now in, what, a couple of divisions, barrels, and I think, what was the other one, breakaway tying?
Breakaway roping.
Yeah.
And that one's new. Barrels is what I started with, and the first time, my very first run that I made was at a jackpot, and Saturday was the first time I loped a barrel pattern, and I entered on a Monday. So the second I could high lope a barrel pattern, I was not wasting any time. The first race that I went to, I was a second off of what I had been before.
Wow.
So I felt pretty good about that. I mean, to be able to get on and be right back where I was, that was really encouraging for me. And yeah, it was good. And so now I've outrun myself. I've outrun myself of what I've done before. I compete in a amateur circuit around here, the RMPRA. I compete on the college level. I'm on the college rodeo team here at Utah State. And I hope to get my permit this year. That's kind of the plan. So come summer, I should be able to hit some pro rodeos.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. Well, you know, you're just, I've told you, we've talked before, you're just an impressive young lady. And not only are you back in the saddle and competing, but you've got some other pretty exciting things that you're working on, don't you?
Yes. A lot of fun things are going on right now. I mean, the motivational speaking is growing and becoming huge, and I absolutely love that. Speaking to groups it's a whole new passion that I knew I liked to speak, but I hadn't had the opportunity to do it like I do now.
Uh-huh.
And to be able to inspire others in that way is so rewarding. And on top of that, we are in the beginning stages of making a movie, so hopefully we'll have that in, I don't know, the next year, year and a half. We're just starting, brand new. It's not even Facebook official yet, so nothing is official until it's on Facebook.
I started to say, when it's on Facebook, it's for real, so, or at least the pages or the comments may not be, but that's great. That is exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I know when we were talking about you coming on the show, you thought you were going to be in Nashville, and a little bit of a change in plans, and you're still in Utah. I think you said you might be back in the Nashville area somewhere around the first part of June.
Oh, yeah. There was I'll be down there, I think, before that as well. I'm not positive of when, but I'll be down there sooner than that.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I think I could be coming down there then as well.
Okay.
I don't remember. My heavens, there's so many things going on, but I remember there was another reason to be coming that way.
All right. Well, I'm going to make sure that you and I stay in touch with each other so that we can actually get connected when you come down here. And I told you about an event that's coming up the 1st of June that we'd love to get you to be a part of. So we'll stay in touch there. Let me ask you, how can people contact you if they are interested in having you come and speak?
Right now, they can email me. They can contact me on Facebook. I'm in the process of getting a website set up so that then they can contact me through there. But
okay.
Right now, my email is probably the easiest route.
Okay,
and,
is that on Facebook?
Or you can do it on Facebook. My email is just amberly.snyder@hotmail.com. So pretty easy.
Okay, amberly.snyder. Okay, amberly.snyder@hotmail.com. And then your Facebook page is Amberly Snyder. And from the time that I looked at that the first time, I think you've added about 7,000 more new friends or followers in just about a week. And
it's growing. It's so amazing. So amazing.
Well, you're an amazing young lady, and it's just been a pleasure to have you on the show. I hope that we can have you come back and visit with us again, and we'll look forward to having you back, talking with you, and really hope that we can connect when you're back in Nashville. So we look forward to having you do that. Anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with before we say bye?
I would just like to tell them all how much I appreciate all the support and love that I get on my Facebook, on notes, in emails and messages. I mean, I don't think people realize how much that they help me. There are days where it does get hard, and every time I can get on Facebook, I can have a message from somebody, and I just want to thank all my supporters for that, that they help me get up every day with a purpose. And anyone that is facing any challenges, that they can face them with strength as well. Never give up and ride on faith is what I would tell them.
Well, Amberly, you're an inspiration to me and somebody that we're going to keep in our thoughts and our prayers, too. So we look forward to having you back on. And I've enjoyed very much talking with you. If you'll hang on the line, I'm going to introduce you to somebody that's on hold. And we're going to listen to this and take a short break, and we'll come back. And when we do, we'll be talking with Junie Fisher. Amberly, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're the drive that keeps me driving when the road gets way too long. And it's your will that keeps me willing when my heart just can't go on. When life is filled with uphill climbs, winding roads and detour signs, you're the one that helps me find my way back home. Back home. Back home. You're the song that keeps me singing when it feels like my soul is losing ground. And it's your smile that keeps me smiling when all my troubles turn me upside down. When life is filled with uphill climbs, winding roads and detour signs, you're the one that helps me find my way back home. Back home. Back home. uphill climbs, winding roads and detour signs. You're the one that helps me find my way back home. Back home. Back home.
Listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and that was R.W. Hampton's Back Home. We have an event that we'd like to tell you about, and that is the first annual Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. Fiona is the granddaughter of our friend, singer-songwriter Michael Martin Murphy, and she has a disease called brittle bone disease. About a dozen years ago, Michael established a foundation named after Fiona to benefit the children and the families that are dealing with this disease. And so the first annual National Trail Ride was created to benefit the foundation to help support these kids and their families. And that event will be taking place in 6 states across the United States and in Germany. To invite you to participate June 5th through the 7th, you can find out more information about the TWEBA National Trail Ride for the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation by going to twhbea.com and click on the National Trail Ride icon. That's twhbea.com and click on the icon for more information about the National Trail Ride. There will be vendors, and there's information there if you'd like to participate both as a vendor or as a sponsor. So be sure and check that out at twhbea.com and participate in the first National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. When we come back, we'll be talking with Junie Fisher.
They hold me on a truck from New Mexico. Left me tied to a fence, so I dug a hole. I was wringing sweat, scarred and scared as I could be. Cowboy rides up on a horse and looks at me. Said this one's about as wild as a filly gets. They call me Filly Nick. Well, he put me in a round pen and I raced around. Ran so fast my ragged feet just brushed the ground. He stepped out to block me and I turned the other way. And that guy Greg decided I was good that day. He told me I was pretty and his favorite pick. He called me Filly Nick. By the time I got to Deer Creek, I was 4 years old. And the man who sent me there said it was time to show. So Greg commenced to teach me things that needed done. And I agreed to go along cause it was kinda fun. He said I was so smart I knew arithmetic. Said I was Filly Nick. He started hauling me to horse shows everywhere. As long as I was catching cows, I didn't care. When I caught him, he would pet me, and they gave us a prize. I knew I was the best horse in Greg Ward's eyes. No other horse could beat me when I hit a lick, cause I was Filly Nick. Well, Greg, he told my owner I was doing well. And pretty soon that fella put me up for sale. So Greg and Shorty scrambled around and found a way. Whatever 3,000 is, that's what they paid. They said I'd stay forever, that was gonna stick. They called me Philinick. Then I went to meet another horse, did not know why. His name was Wayward Wind, he was a handsome guy. By fall I bloomed, by winter something squirmed around. In the spring there was a foal beside me on the ground. They told me my baby's name was Amy Nick, and I was Philinick. Sugar Nick. She and Greg just flew, they won the snaffle bit. Four more by Sugar Van D, Doc Marcus and Doc's Remedy. They were happy with my baby, they admired me. Could not have been a better life if I had picked. My life is Philinick. Well, I had to quit this earth in 1983. Some doggone kicking yearling got the best of me. My friends at the Ward Ranch, well, they all cried. I'll admit that it broke all our hearts to say goodbye. Just being what I was probably my best trick when I was Philinick. They buried me, but all that's in that grave are bones. I still wander around the ranch because it is my home. And now that my friend Greg has slipped the earthly bounds, he saddles me at night and we just lope around. 'Cause you know he always said I was his favorite pick, and I'm still Philinick. I'm still his favorite pig. He's still old Greg. I'm still hard to get on. And I'm still Philinick.
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and that's Philinick by Junie Fisher. And Junie, how are you?
I'm really great, Gary. How about you?
I'm doing well. I tell you what, put two girls together, and I think we can just talk.
Oh, you had to come in and tell us, okay, girls, you have to stop now.
Well, Amberly is such a sweetheart, and we're glad she was on the show. And Amberly, if you're listening, you can call back in and talk to Junie some more. That'd be okay. But Junie, we want to talk a little bit about your horse activities. And I know Mark Rashid is going to join us a little bit later, and so we'll be talking with him. And then we have a special project that we want to get into more when he comes on. But you've had a great year in the music business this past year. You received more awards.
I did. Well, yes, my song "Listen," which is the title song from the album "Listen," was the Western Music Association Song of the Year, and I'm just thrilled to death for that. I did one of those Sally Field acceptance speeches where I just cried my way through it, because that song for me was such a groundbreaking thing, and about being really who I was and really showing some heart and honesty that I had not shown to people in music. I'd always done music, and I'd done, you know, really gritty lyrics,
because I'd never written anything that was really personal. And when I wrote those songs, I'm telling you, it was, I'll tell people over and over, it's the most difficult album I ever wrote.
Wow. Well, it's a great album. It's a great album.
And, because I sat up at night and I'd write all night, and then I'd sit and go through what I'd written in the wee hours of the morning and cry some more, because
wow,
it was just a catharsis to get these songs out. But I'm glad I did. And Philonic, which just played, was the one that just tore my heart out to write it. But I needed to write something for my dear friend and mentor, Greg Ward, and I didn't know how to do it directly, so I decided to do it through Philonic, his great mare.
Well, it's a great song. It's a fun song, but it's got a lot of meaning.
Yeah, it is. It's not a sad song. Yes, Philonic dies, but you know what? Unless they're under 30, they're all dead. You know, and I don't mean to be flip about that, but people say, oh, you know, so-and-so, such-and-such horse died, and he was 32.
Right.
And they go, oh, that's so sad. I was like, it is not sad. He was 32. He probably had a great life up until he was about 29, you know?
Right.
So
right.
So we let him go, and Philonic didn't die of old age, but you know what? She had a great life. She had a life that she wouldn't have gotten had she not been at the Ward Ranch. She would have never had the opportunity to be a great horse that Greg gave her had she not shown up there. And what to me, it's an uplifting story. And for me, I when I finally figured out that line, you know, they buried me, but all that's in that grave are bones, I still wander around this ranch because it is my home. And now that my friend Greg has slipped the earthly bounds, well, he saddles me at night. We just lope around. That is so true.
It is true.
And he is there at the ranch. Every time I'm there at the ranch, I can say, do you think I ought to work the flag today, or should I do this? And he'll send me a message that tells me what to do today.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. But, yeah, we can all relate. People that have been in horses for a long time can relate to that, because we've all had horses that that we've lost, and and they're never completely gone. And it's the same way.
No, they're never far. They're always there to remind us of the lessons that they taught us. But anyway, there we go. That was the one.
Yeah. Well, it was a great song, and you know, we played Fly earlier while we were talking with Amberlee, and just another great song that was just, I thought, extremely fitting because of the feeling that people have when they're on their horse. And so it's a great album. We want to encourage people, if they haven't, to pick up or order the CD, listen. And
let's send it to them.
Yeah. So we want folks to do that. Just several great songs. We're going to get a couple of more of those in just a little bit. I know Mark will be joining us shortly as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing Mark.
Yeah, but
a great guy and a good friend.
Tell us about what's been going on with Silk. I know that you had a little time.
Oh, Silk's so fabulous. Well, I've been off her since right about the end of December. I'm back in Tennessee now for a month, and so she's staying with my best riding buddy in California, who's a cow horse person, and she and I both rode with Greg Ward at different times, and we both rode with another trainer. And she has the same work ethic about riding that I have. In other words, some people get a cutting horse and they leave it standing in the pen, and then they go cut on Thursday and try to go cut on Saturday, and they wonder why their horse is always lame. Well,
right. You
have to long trot those horses every single day and be loping them every single day and keep them supple for them to. And so she's got the same work ethic I have. And she rides very much like I do, so I left Silk with her for the month, and she long trots her and keeps her loped and gives me daily reports about what Silk did today. and I laugh when I hear him. She said, oh, yes, we were in a trotting race with one of the neighbors and almost won. And I thought, well, that would be my Silk. You know, she's a little powerhouse, that mare, and thank goodness my friend Kim understands her. The first day I left her with her, this was back in September, I was on my way to Texas, and it called me the next day and said, and it was the first time she had ever gone out and loped her, and she said, oh, my God, have you ever been to the bottom of this horse? And I said, Never. But Loper 3 days and just kind of keep her moving, and on the third or fourth day, she'll come back to you. She will. And she said, I'm going to trust you on that. And then the next day, she said, okay, I get her now. And I knew she would.
Oh, gosh, well, that's good. Well, talk to us a little bit about what's going on with your music. I know we've got a new year that's starting,
yep,
and new tours that are taking place.
Yeah, booking new tours and trying to leave gaps where there's horse shows I know I can go to. And, mm-hmm. you know, I look at that, and I told my husband, well, I'm, you know, leaving gaps there, you know, to go to petting shows. And he looked at me and kind of rolled his eyes. He said, does this mean you're not coming home?
Oh,
well, but kind of.
Oh, goodness.
But, you know, just booking up things and trying to conscientiously leave some time so that I can be kind of free in July and August if this other project comes around, and I'll hopefully have Silk with me in Colorado when I stage up for that. And last
right.
year I took her on the road with me. She came, I brought her out, I had her in Arizona, and I brought her out to California in March, and she stayed with me the rest of the year, either on the road with me or staying at my friend Kim's house, and I just went back and forth and didn't do on a city-to-city tour loop as much as I did going out, doing a few shows, and then going back to ride my horse.
I understand. Well, you know, I thought it was so cool that you took Silk with you. I mean, you know, I don't know a lot of artists that are taking their horses on the road.
It's not an easy thing to do, but she's a good traveler. She's an old campaigner. She's one of those horses you can, you know, open the drop down and stick a bucket of water in, and she'll drink water, get her off the trailer, tie her up, and she might fuss around and look at something 4 miles away, but she will drink water when you put it in front of her. And so she eats and drinks well on the road. She rests well. She travels. She's a great traveler. So she is not a difficult horse to travel with. You just have to plan ahead. I can't tour the way I do on my own, where I just stop when I get tired and take a nap. Stop for the night somewhere and have to, you know, plan ahead. But it was very rewarding to have her with me, and it did her a world of good to have her on the road with me and just tinker around with her and trail ride her and do anything but cattle. And when she came back in the fall, it had done her so much good, and she came back fresh and relaxed and happy, and we worked out some things with her. And she came back, did her first tedding, and won both her classes.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, it's amazing how things that are good for horses are good for people, too. So, you know, to take a little time off and come back.
It's as good for me as it is for her.
Yeah, it really is. Well, we want to take just a real quick break, and you've got a song that you did called Who They Are. Tell us about that. How did you come to write that?
I wrote Who They Are with my very dear friend, Waddy Mitchell. Waddy and I have been friends for a long time, and he wanted to try to write something together. We had a project we were working on at that time, and I went up to his place, and we locked ourselves in the house for 3 or 4 days, and we were not going to come out till we had written some songs. And, I mean, there was a lot of you know, comments going back and forth, and we're still good friends, but it wasn't his wife said, why don't you two take a break so you'll still be friends? Because when you get a songwriter and a poet that both know their crafts together, it's not always magic until they come to an agreement about whose darlings are going to get given up. Because some darling line and you don't want to give it up. But we came to a great agreement, and we came out with Who They Are. It took us another year and a half to keep rewriting it and retinkering it till it came to what it is now. And then we did another 4 days about a year and a half later, and came out with, I think, a total of 6 songs.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, that's a great story about that, and we look forward to have Waddy on the show in the future. But right now, let's take a listen to what you and Waddy accomplished together, and I guess still remain friends. And that's Who They Are by Junie Fisher. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we'll be back. Mm-hmm.
when by its nature begins to sing, much like the poet with his poem transcends his station, his flesh and bone. It's who they are. Art is how he shows what's in his heart. The horseman's touch through calloused hand whispers a bridge between horse and man. It's who they are. It's who they are, it's why they breathe, it's what they hear, it's all they see, it's how they're born, it's how they're made, it's not their choice, they have no say, it's who they are. And if God sends inspiration to share these gifts on earth, then who are we to wonder if those gifts have any worth? If not for them, where would we turn? They fill a need, when will we learn? They feed our souls, it's not their choice. They didn't ask to be our voice. It's who they are. And if God sends inspiration to share these gifts on earth, then who are we to wonder if those gifts have any worth? If not for them, where would we turn? They fill a need, when will we learn? They feed our souls, it's not their choice. They didn't ask to be our voice. It's who they are.
Listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and that beautiful song is Junie Fisher's Who They Are. And so while we've been listening to that, we've had Mark Rashid join us on the call as well. So Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing very well, and we're really pleased that you could join us. I know you're out traveling and doing some horse business, so thanks for taking the time to join us on the call today. And Junie's going to stay on. She's going to be my co-host for the next little while.
So. Oh, goody, I get to ask questions.
You can ask questions on there. But, you know, we were talking, Mark, we want to talk a little bit about, and we're going to talk about the movie that's going to be coming out, but we want to talk a little bit for our listeners so that they know a little bit more about you and your horse background And I introduced you earlier as being a horseman and a clinician and an author. And then I called you something that was related to movies, but we won't go into that right now. But
okay.
But anyway, talk to us a little bit about what your start with horses and how you've been involved with horses as a young person in your career.
Well, actually, yeah, I kind of got started with horses fairly early on. I guess I like to say that I got started with horses when I was about 10, but the truth of the matter is I mostly cleaned up after them when I was about 10. I didn't actually start doing anything with them until, you know, a year or so after that. There was a fellow that just lived up the road from us there, and he had a little horse operation, and I would go over there and spend time with him and his horses, and I kind of always say that he kind of is the guy that put me on the path that I'm on now, for sure. You know, whether it's the right path or not, it's the right path for me.
Right.
You know, he was always very kind with his horses, and you know, he could get pretty much with them without having to raise his hand or raise his voice, and that resonated with me when I was younger and still does today. And so that's what the kind of work that I try to do when I'm out doing my work with horses.
Right.
So,
where'd you grow up, Mark? Where was home for you?
Back then in Wisconsin, I was a cheesehead back then, I guess what they call. But back then it was, and I've been in now for gosh 30-something years. So
right.
I worked with him for about 4 years, I guess. Total, and then
okay.
And then I moved on to, you know, I've been doing horses right along, but I got into music and building instruments as well, building guitars and other string instruments and that kind of thing. So I went off in that direction for a little while.
Did I see some photographs of you with a guitar and a little longer hair in a group called the Elk Tones, or am I mistaken about that?
No, that would have been me. Yeah,
that would have been you. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I play with. That's a group of guys that I play with. You know, we're all a little longer in the tooth these days, and so it's all acoustic. You know, guitars and bass and we all sing. I don't sing very well, but we all sing and have some fun. And there's really only a couple of things that I've ever really done in my life to make a living. One of them was music, and the other one was working with horses. So
okay,
both have kept me out of trouble.
Well, that's good. You've done well, especially
yeah.
if. Yeah. If the music kept you out of trouble, so that was a good thing.
Yeah.
And I have ex-wives that would say it would have been good.
How did the music keep him out of trouble? He played with the Elk Tones.
Right.
I know those guys.
Oh gosh. Well, I know some ladies that wish that I'd stayed away from horses a little bit more, but they can be pretty expensive. And I was just thinking, it's kind of neat when you get to be old enough that you can start having reunions. You know, it's kind of nice
yeah.
when bands can get together. But Mark, tell us about when did you make horses a career? And what are you doing now with your horse activities?
Oh, boy. It's funny because I never really thought of horses as a career. It was just something that I did, and I did it for a long time. Basically, for free, you know, so just to kind of hone my craft and get better at what I was doing, I'd pretty much take on anything that folks had if they were having trouble with it and seeing if we could help them out a little bit. And, And then I began working, you know, various ranches and cattle ranches and dude ranches as well, and dude ranches with cattle. And so you know, just so it kind of it just kind of evolved from there. I ended up, you know, most of the places that I'd worked, I was always the horse guy, you know. So and living in Colorado, I'd be up on mountains horses for some ranch, and never really knew that there were other trainers or other ways of doing things out there, because I was so isolated. It was just me and the horses, whoever was working for me or I was working for, that kind of thing. And then things just sort of evolved from there. I ended up I was actually a horse abuse investigator for a while for the state of Colorado. You know, it's kind of a long story, but I ended up doing that for a little while and got involved with a horse rescue in Colorado, and I ended up working a lot of their horses. They needed a sort of a full-time volunteer trainer, which ended up being me, and I started to develop a bit of a reputation for being able to handle horses that were struggling a little bit, and uh-huh. things just kind of grew from there. And then I also trained and taught people how to train horses. We used BLM Mustangs for that. Right. So the Mustangs were gathered, and then they were brought to Canyon City, where they, you know, they were kind of sorted and all that. And then when we got them, so from the time they got off the range to the time we got them, they were pretty fresh. And that's what we used to for our school. We used the BLM Mustangs for that.
Okay.
And just kind of one thing led to another, and eventually I sort of fell into doing clinics, I guess, and by accident. And pretty much everything I've ever done in my life has been by accident. So it doesn't. So you know, I was asked to write when I was teaching. A horse training student that came in and said that her husband had a horse that he was getting ready to sell, and was wondering if I could go look at him, because they didn't know how much to ask for him. And I went over and they couldn't catch him, so we worked on that for a little bit and got him to where he could be caught. And once you got him caught, he wouldn't tie very well, so we worked on that for a little bit. And once you got him caught, you know, he couldn't be saddled, so we worked on that. Once you got him saddled, you couldn't get on him, and so we worked on that. Once you got on him, you couldn't get him going, and so we worked on that. Once you got him going, you couldn't stop him, and so we worked on that. By the time we were done, he decided he didn't want to sell him anymore because he's such a nice horse. And he asked me if I'd ever thought about writing a book about the kind of work that I do, and I told him I hadn't. And he said, "Well, if you ever get a mind to do that, let me know, and I think I can help you out." And I said, "Well, okay." You know, that was the end of that. And a couple weeks later, he called me up and he asked me if I'd ever thought about, you know, giving any more thought to that book we talked about. And I told him I hadn't. And he said that he was going to see. It turns out that he ended up being my editor for most of my books that I've written.
Oh, great.
And, but that was how I got started writing books. And so,
I was just going to ask, your first book, I guess, was somewhat of a training introduction book, or?
No, it was just a storybook. You know, it was all my books are, they just basically tell stories on,
okay,
on things that I've done and that have worked for me, and some things that haven't worked for me, and how those things are all tied into what I do and how I do it, and they just kind of took off, and next thing you know, people were calling me an author and all that. It was kind of a surprise to me. So that's kind of how I got to doing clinics, and you know, that was that first book, I guess, was 22 or 25 years ago, something like that.
Okay.
So, and then
well, now
been about 11 or 12 since then. So.
Okay. Do you primarily function today as a clinician? I know that you were in the eastern part of the country today, and are you primarily do clinics and travel and do clinics? And I know that we talked the other day. You're going to be going to Europe shortly, and I suppose doing clinics there.
Yeah, we're in North Carolina. We'll be here the next couple, 3-4 days, doing a clinic over the weekend and some private things first part of the week, and then we're off to Florida after that, and then Texas after that, and then California after that. So, Europe will be, I think, May.
Okay.
We'll be over in Europe doing clinics.
And I'll just throw in that we're going to look for you in Colorado Springs the first week of June. So I hope to have you out there. We want to take just a break, and we want to listen, which is the song for the movie Out of the Wild. And when we come back, Mark, I'd like to talk a little bit about how that book came about and then how the book has turned into the project that it has become for the movie. So you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. We're going to take a quick break and listen to a great song by Junie Fisher called Listen, and we'll be back to talk more with Mark and with Junie.
Once would you try to hear what I hear, see the world through my eyes, not just through my ears. This horse has a voice. Do you know something's missing? Give you my all, if you would just listen. Just listen. There are
You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we are talking with Mark Rashid and the multi-talented Junie Fisher and her song we just played called Listen. So, Mark, talk to us a little bit about how the book Out of the Wild was written and how that came about.
Well, it's kind of a the book itself is actually pretty new. We wrote it, I think about 5 or 6 years ago, something like that. But the story is about 20 years old. And I was at a clinic in California, in L.A., and of all places. And after the clinic, this gal that had written in the clinic came up and asked if I'd ever written any fiction, which I had not at the time. And she said, if you could, because she really liked the stories and stuff that I'd written in some of the books. And she said, if you could write a fictional story, we might be able to turn it into a movie. Her husband was a writer, and they had a production company out there in L.A. And so I wrote this story as a movie script to start with. And they really liked it. And he had just started with his partner. They had just started this production company, and they were into a movie, but then one of his movies kind of took off, and so they didn't need my little movie after that. For him was something like Shrek.
You're breaking up just a little bit on us, Mark.
Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah, you're fine now. There was just a little bit of a break in there.
Oh, okay. But his movie was Shrek, was the one that took off, so he didn't really need my little movie anymore.
Well, I guess maybe not. I guess maybe not. So,
yeah, so. But it passed around Hollywood for a while, and some people had a chance to take a look at it, and it had been off a couple of times, and then it just kind of fell through the cracks. And
well, these movies seem to take a while to get put together and to come back around, so it's not unusual, it doesn't seem, for a movie to be created, started, and then maybe take 4 or 5 years before it starts to come to fruition on there. So you're about right on time for this.
Yeah. Yeah, just it's another one of those 20-year overnight successes kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we wrote the book just to flesh the characters out. You know, I like the story so much and the characters, and then the director of the project, he kind of saw it and was really interested in it, and that's kind of how we got to where we are right now.
Okay. Now, we don't want to give away anything, but what's the basic storyline? What are we looking at as a story?
Well, the story itself is about a guy who he's a modern-day cowboy rancher who has lost his family due to an accident that he blames himself for. And 17 years on from the accident, he has kind of turned himself into a drunk and can't find a job and is not doing very well, and he ends up getting a job on the last place a real working cowboy wants to be, which is on a dude ranch, and turns out that the owner of the ranch is a horse woman, and trains her horses in a little bit kinder way than most might, and so a Mustang is brought to her for training. And the Henry is the main character's name. Him and this Mustang have a little bit of a rough start to begin with, but then as time goes on, they sort of hit it off, and he ends up doing, because of the circumstances during the movie, he ends up being the one who trains the horse, with Jesse's the female lead. With her direction and help and all that. So it's a love story. It's a story of redemption, and it's a story of how how humans and horses can help one another, and you know, and be better together than they are, you know, the sum of the parts kind of thing. So
right,
so
right.
That's basically the story. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask this question, I'll ask you both, and you may have different stories. I know I've done this before with some guests, but Junie, how did you and Mark meet?
It was a few years ago, and I had an album called Gone for Colorado, which was about my great-grandfather's early life, being a runaway from Missouri and ended up in Colorado with a ranch, and I guess by some fluke or some reason, Mark got a hold of that album. Maybe somebody made him take it. I don't know. but he wrote me a note and sent me one of his books and sent me one of his CDs. And his book was so compelling, and his things on his CD. I thought, wow, this guy is a intelligent, articulate writer. And so many people I hear from, they go, oh, I want to send you my CD. And I go, oh, okay. But I thought, boy, this guy is so intelligent. So we sort of just kept in touch and kept a friendship going and talking and got to know some other people that are friends with Mark's. And we got together one night, I think it was last year finally in person, and had a little jam session all night that was just, I mean, just about wet your pants funny for us and everybody else there, and it was just great. So we've just sort of kept that up over time and talking about horses and he's just a good guy. So I like to surround myself with quality people, so he fits right in with my people like Waddy Mitchell and Dave Stamey that are just good folks.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, Mark, how did it come about that "Listen" became the song that was used for the theme for this movie?
Well, Junie's such a great writer and performer, and the words that she uses to describe things, you know, they just kind of cut right to the core, you know, and. And that particular song, the first time I heard it, in fact, I think the first time I heard it was that night when we were sitting around playing guitar and telling lies out there in California. And
oh, you're on to me. I thought you believed me.
I don't think the album was out yet when we sat down and played.
It was not released.
Yeah, okay. And so she played the song that night, and I kind of muddled along with her, and I thought, man, what a great song this, you know, it just cuts right to the heart of the matter, and so I've loved the song since the first time I heard it, and then to hear it, you know, recorded. It's just, you know, it's just a beautiful song, and everybody that I know that has heard it, it's really meant a lot to them. And,
right.
And it's a perfect song for what we're trying to portray in this movie, you know, about listening and listening to the horse and having the horse having a say in things, and it goes hand in hand. It's almost as if she wrote the song for the movie. And
it was just meant to be. Yeah. Well, when you listen to the words of the song, and then if you've seen the trailer for the movie and a little bit of the concept of what the movie's about, it is just the perfect song for what will be a great movie for people to be able to enjoy. So, you know, we want to talk a little bit about the way that you are looking for the funding for this and the Kickstarter program and where people can go to get involved too, because, you know, there just aren't enough good Westerns produced today, and there are not enough good horse movies that are produced. And so I know that folks that love horses, love the Western lifestyle, and just love a great story would like to be able to get involved some way. So talk to us about Kickstarter, how they can find Out of the Wild, and how they can participate.
Sure, yeah. Well, we had a number of, you know, Hollywood types, financiers and whatnot, looking at the project. But every time we turned around, you know, they might be able to come up with the money for us, but they wanted to take total control of the project, which we just couldn't do. You know, there's no telling what the story would have turned out to be, and, you know, how the horses would have been handled in the movie and that kind of thing. And so we decided to let go of that idea and just go with crowdfunding, which is a new sort of source for funding any kind of project, really. But in
right.
this case, it's a film project. And Kickstarter is a crowdfunding website. And basically, the idea there is that you have a goal, which ours is about $775,000 in order to fund the film, you know, produce it. You know, pre-production, post-production, and then hopefully get to Sundance next year. But the idea there is to you know, put the project on the website. You have some rewards that people can, if they're interested in backing the project, they can pick a reward or no reward at all if they want.
Okay.
And the rewards go anywhere from $5 all the way up to $10,000, and everything in between. Most of our rewards are sort of in the $150 to, you know, $25 range, so they're really affordable for folks, and they're really cool. A lot of it's really pretty cool stuff. But the idea is that folks will go on, and if they want to are interested in the project and they want to help fund the project, they can pledge a certain amount of money, get a reward if they want, and that money goes directly to the movie, and you don't get the money unless you make the movie. So,
gotcha.
So it's a great way to do it. People are assured that, you know, they get the stuff that they're looking for, the project that they're looking for, and it's, for us, it's a 30-day window that we have to raise the funds. And if we don't raise the funds in that amount of time, all of the pledges are sort of null and void. So then we go back to the drawing board. So
gotcha.
that's the idea behind the Kickstarter program.
Okay, so let's talk about where people can go to find this. And first of all, I guess Facebook, you have a page set up on Facebook that's for
yes.
Out of the Wild?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it's if people go and search for Out of the Wild movie on Facebook, they'll be able to find us there. We do have a website with the full trailer on it. We shot up last year. That turned out really, really great. And it's on the website. The website is outofthewildmovie.com.
Okay.
And then on Kickstarter, you know, if you go to the Kickstarter website, which is just kickstarter.com, and do a little search for Out of the Wild, our project will pop up. And,
okay.
And you just go to the project, and it's real easy. You just click on the green button and pick the whole story of the project is on that Kickstarter page. So it's there's quite a bit of information on the project itself and who's involved and who we have for actors and that kind of thing. It's all on that website.
Okay. All right. And I would think that the links to the Kickstarter website are on the Facebook page and the website for outofthewildmovie.com as well.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So
exactly.
For one more time, folks can go to Facebook and like Out of the Wild Movie. They can go
yes,
to
uh-huh.
the website, outofthewildmovie.com, or they can find it on Kickstarter and contribute. So, you know, if folks really want to see a quality movie with a great storyline that relates to the lifestyle that we like, and that's the Western lifestyle and horses, then they can contribute, I think, just pretty much any amount. Isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, it's literally from a dollar right on up to as much as you want to give, and people, you know, and it's amazing to me, you know, where folks will put a dollar into the pot, you know, and we don't know who these people are, so I don't know if that's this person's last dollar, you know, you just don't know, but they've
right.
taken the time to go there to. They've, you know, read the information and it's meant enough to them to even put a dollar in. And you know, that just, you know, sometimes you have to, for me anyway, it's just, it's amazing to me that somebody would time to do that, you know, that it means enough to them to want to do that. And it's, I'm just so appreciative of these folks that are out there today and go to that site and are pledging the money because we aren't going to be able to do it without them. So it means an awful lot to me.
Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, it's great to be able to help good folks and folks that we share something with. And so we're going to encourage people to go to Out of the Wild Movie on Facebook, outofthewildmovie.com on the website, and Kickstarter, .com, and do a quick search for Out of the Wild Movie there so you can contribute. Any amount is appreciated. We're kind of on a timeline to get this thing done, aren't we, Mark? I think you said, what, the next 30 days?
Well, actually, we're down to 20 days.
Okay.
20 days, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And I want to add, this is Junie, I want to add that before I sent a CD to Mark and to also one of the co-producers, Tim Ryan, I read the script.
Uh-huh.
Mark emailed me the script, and I read the whole thing before I agreed, before I even thought of sending it. I knew I had some songs that could fit in that kind of a thing, but I got to read the script first, and I believed in the story. It is not a Hallmark movie. There's some gritty places.
Okay.
But it's a clean, family-friendly movie, but there's so much realism, and Mark's dedication to keeping it real with the horses. This isn't a movie where they're going to... And when he told me that they're not going to turn loose of control, that's when I said, okay, I want to help. Because I've seen so many potentially good scripts ruined by non-horsemen doing the production where they don't get it that horses don't stop and rear up and whinny, and we don't want scenes where somebody's jerking a horse around and flapping their elbows to lope, and I didn't want to be
right.
part of that. But when I
right.
knew that Mark was going to be right there making sure things were done right, that's when I said I'm in.
All right, well, let's get behind this, and you know, it's a movie about horsemen, by horsemen, and for horse people, and people that love a great storyline too. So I want to encourage everybody to check out the Facebook page, outofthewild.com, or Out of the Wild Movie, the website, outofthewildmovie.com, and the Kickstarter page. And so, Junie, let me go ahead, Mark. You had something you wanted to say.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, Junie, where can we find you next?
I'm headed to California at the end of this month, and I'll fly out there, pick up my rig, and go to Arizona and do a few shows in Arizona, and then boogaloo back to California to get ready for some cuttings.
Okay. All right. Well, first things first.
If I could do first things first, I would have skipped. I would have just stayed in California through January, so I could have hit the first cutting in January. But I'm going to miss that one, and that just pains me because I'm in the points for end of the year awards at one cutting organization, and it pains me that I'm missing that first show. But I'll get to the next one.
Oh, great. Well, we want, and we can visit your website too, and you have a Facebook page.
Yes.
Junie. You're on Facebook. Yes. Your website
yes.
is what?
It's juniefisher.com. I'm the easiest person in the world to find. It's JUNIFISHER.com.
Okay. Well, we want you to follow Junie on Facebook. We want you to check her website for her schedule of where she's going to be. And she's just a great lady and a great artist and entertainer, so don't miss out on her. Mark, where are you headed? Where could folks find you?
Well, right now we're in, let's see, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I had to think for a second there.
Okay.
We'll be in Anthony, Florida in a couple weeks. And we'll be near Tyler, Texas in February.
Okay.
And,
all right.
So, yeah, and our website is just my name, markrashid.com. And folks, my schedule is on there, and folks can kind of check up on me there.
Okay. All right. And you have a Facebook page as well.
Yeah, the Facebook page is Considering the Horse, and which is the name of my first book. So, just Considering the Horse and my name on the backside of that, and people can get all the information on what we're doing, where we are on the Facebook page as well.
Okay. Well, it's been great having you guys on today, and great to talk to you. Mark, we'd like to visit with you some more later on, and Junie, always fun to have you on, and hope we get to visit again soon.
Thanks for having me. And Mark, are you going to be out at Susie's this spring?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Maybe
in March.
I'll catch up with you there. Oh, perfect. I think I'll be around in March, so I'll catch up with you.
Okay. All right. We're going to end the show today with a song called Nighthawk that Junie wrote. And Junie, is there any story about this? And let me
my
say
dear
this.
Friend.
No, I was just going to say this is one of the neatest songs.
Thanks. My dear friend Diane Tribbett sent me a piece of poetry and asked me if I wanted it. She had shared it with another songwriter who had looked at it and said, this is really neat, but I can't think of anything to do with it. And I said, if you'll let me change some lines and tinker this into a lyric, I want to do something with it. And then it was one of those long sit up all night and play guitar riffs until I came up with the guitar riff that made the thing come together. So I'm very proud of that song.
Well, it's a great song. I think I saw you do this at the WMA.
Yes.
Deal, it's just a great song, so we're going to close the show out with that. I'm going to let you and Mark chat some more. We've got a few things that we're going to take care of as far as house cleaning to close the show. And, Mark, thanks for joining us today.
We don't have to clean house. That's good.
Well, I'm going to just let you guys chat. I got a house clean. So. All right. Thanks, Junie. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much, Gary. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, we've enjoyed talking with Mark Rashid and Junie Fisher. So be sure and get out and support Out of the Wild movie. There are trailers that you can take a look at. I think it's a movie that you'll enjoy and want to take your family to. And help support it with a dollar or two or 20 or 100 or 1,000, whatever you can afford. And the information on that can be found on Facebook as well as the website. We've enjoyed our show today. We're grateful to have had Amberly Snyder on to talk with us, and we look forward to having Amberly back again. Of course, Junie Fisher and Mark Rashid, and we've enjoyed Junie's music. Just a great and talented young lady. Next week, we have a very interesting show for you, and it will be on at noon, live at Central Time every Thursday. So every Thursday, noon Central Time, you can tune in for the live show. The podcasts are available 24/7 on demand immediately after the show has aired live. Some really neat things that are going on. We want to remind you to check out TWHBEA.com for the National Trail Ride to benefit the Fiona Rose Murphy Foundation. It's really going to be a lot of fun. There'll be clinics. There'll be beautiful trails to ride on. We've got a great lineup of entertainers that are being put together. And in Tennessee at the location, Michael Martin Murphy will be in concert on June the 7th. So just a lot of fun. We're going to make the concerts available to the public. So if you're in California or Tennessee or Missouri or Colorado or any of the six locations, it's just going to be a great time for you to come out and trail ride on some beautiful trails, to enjoy some great entertainment and clinics, and support a cause that is certainly worthwhile. So you can find out more about that at TWHBEA.com. You've been listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. Join us next Thursday at noon Central Time, and we remind you, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening.
Australia to the drumming and jingle of unshod feet.
sunshine.